drag you. You're so sweet, Colonel. It's because we're in love, Tillerast. Love is the reason I'd drag you anywhere. We love ourselves, and so we deserve two thrones, at least two. We deserve them, so we'll have them, even if we have to kill 10,000 babies to get them. Babies? Killing babies? Why not? They resumed their swishing rush through the grasses. I can almost see them, Tillerast. An army of babies between us and those thrones. They can swing their bone rattles all they like. We'll chew through them like cheese. And kittens and puppies and small mice, too. Stop it, Curdle. You're making me hungry. And save your breath. We'll need it to kill Carabas. Can't kill Carabas with our breaths, Tillerast. She's Otataral, remember? We've got to do it the hard way. Piece by bloody piece, until she's raining down from the sky. It will be great. Won't it, Curdle? Won't it? The best, Tillerast. Almost as good as eating babies. How long is this going to take? Are we there yet, Curdle? My legs are about to fall off, I swear it. Maybe we should veer. For a bit, I mean. Just a bit. And then back down. And then we run for a while, and then veer again. What do you think? I think you're almost as clever as me. And you're almost as clever as me. We're almost as clever as each other. Isn't that great? Paran reined in to let the boy off. Ordering the rest of the troop to remain where they were, he waved Mathok to accompany him as he rode closer to the foot of the pass. The old mountains formed a saddle neck ahead, and the slope gave them a clear view of the trenches, berms and redoubts crowding there. Figures swarmed the defences. "We've been seen," Mathok said. 500 strides from the base of the rough slope, Paran halted, studied the vista. A cobbled road worked its way up the pass. At the first line of defences, a half-ring of staked earthworks curled to face inward on that road. To attempt an assault there would invite a deadly enfilade. But the rest of the ground to either side of that road was rough and broken, almost a scree. "Had a wife once," Mathok muttered. "Just like this." "Excuse me?" "The closer I got, the uglier she looked. One of the many pitfalls in getting drunk at the full moon. Waking up to the horrors you've committed and then having to live with them." There were two distinct tiers to the defences, and the closer one bore the standards of Colance. "Shriven auxiliaries," Paran said. "We'll have to go through them to get to the wolf army. Now that's an unexpected complication. But you know, I loved that woman with all my might. She was my best wife, it turned out. What happened to her?" "She inherited and left me for a prettier man. You see, she woke up that morning feeling the same horror as me, and the closer I got... Mathok, looks like we're going to have a fight on our hands after all. Your words make me happy. We need to overwhelm and rout the Shriven. Then we can deal with the mercenaries. As it turns out," he added, collecting his reins, "that might be just what we need to convince them to surrender. There'll be a pure up there, High Fist. More fun for Kalam and your High Mage. We'll draw up tonight. Mathok, your warriors won't be much use if they stay mounted." The man shrugged. "Why do raiders ride horses, High Fist? Because it's the quickest means of getting away. You're not just raiders anymore, Mathok. We'll skirmish if that's what you need, but we won't like it. Now, that road, that's a wide road, a military road. Clear the flanks and we can ride straight up it. Into the waiting teeth of those mercenaries? And uphill at that? I'll not see you wasted. Sorry, no matter how thirsty you are for blood, you may have to wait a while longer." The warrior grimaced and then shrugged. "We're thirsty for blood, yes, but not if most of it is our own." "Good," Paran grunted. "Keep your mob in check, that's all I ask." Mathok was studying him in a peculiar fashion. "High Fist, I've heard a lifetime of tales about the Malazan army, and I've run from a few close calls in my day, ended up getting chased for weeks." He jutted his chin at the pass. "But this, even those Shriven, look to be enough to not only stop us dead, but hurt us bad in the doing. Your point? I fear for the host, that's all. Paran nodded. Come the morning, Mathok, find a high vantage point for you and your warriors, and I will show you everything you need to know about the Melazan army. 2 turns of the sand after the sun had set, the host drew up a short distance from the base of the pass. Beneath the luminous green glow of the jade strangers, the companies broke out into their bivouacs. Forward pickets were established, although no probes were expected from the enemy. Soldiers ate a quick meal, and then rested. Most slept, although a few attended to their weapons and armor, their leather harnesses, their shields and footwear. Trailed by Fist-Writhe Bude, Paran walked among the camps, exchanging words here and there with those soldiers too charged up or nervous to sleep. He had never expected to be commanding an army. He had never expected to take the place of Dujek One-Arm. He thought often of that man and took from Dujek all he could. The host had known bad times. It deserved better, but Paran suspected that this sentiment was felt by every commander. When he and Writhe Bude finally retired to the command tent, they found Callum and Quick Ben awaiting them. It was 2 turns before dawn. The assassin was wrapped in black muslin, pulling on his stained and worn leather gloves, and though he was wearing chain beneath the cloth, there was almost no sound while he paced. Quick Ben sat on the ground, leaning back against a squat four-legged chest, his legs stretched out, his eyes half shut. Paran stared down at the wizard. Well?
Well, what?
Are you ready? Usually I can smell when there's been magic going on, and I can't smell a thing, High Mage. Quick Ben opened one eye to regard him.
If you can tell, High Fist, then so can the Pures up there. Trust me, we're ready.
Paran glanced across at Writhe, who simply shrugged in reply. He squinted at her. Get some sleep, Fist.
Yes, sir.
After she'd left, Paran stepped into Callum's path. Muttering an oath, the assassin halted, bared his teeth and said, You're getting on my nerves, High Fist. Quick Ben spoke.
Do you have that card ready, High Fist?
Paran nodded, edging to one side so that Callum could resume pacing.
Good, said the wizard.
He sat up, reached for a leather satchel lying beside him, rummaged inside it for a moment and then drew out a crooked stick on which was tied an arm's length of twine. One end of the stick had been hacked into something resembling a point. Quick Ben stabbed that end into the floor. Then he removed from his satchel 2 small balls of weighted, knotted cloth, one black, the other gold. He bound these to the string, moving them away from the stick until the twine stretched straight.
Callum, he said, it's time.
The assassin halted, shook himself like a bear. Climbing to his feet, Quick Ben faced Paran.
Don't even blink, sir. Understand?
I will be vigilant, High Mage, Paran assured him. But you have me a little concerned here. What do you think awaits you?
Beyond 1 or 2 pure Forkrel Asael?
Quick Ben snorted and then scowled.
Not sure. Something. Let's get on with this, Callum growled.
Paran drew off his helm, set it down on the map table. In battle, he would attach the full face grill. It was an arcane piece, Untan, a gift from Writhe Bude, but he still wasn't used to its full weight. Turning to face the 2 men, he began.
I think we should...
And then fell silent. He was alone in the tent.
Gods below, he's good.
Heart suddenly pounding, nips of pain flaring in his stomach, he drew out the wooden card Ormulogan had prepared, studied it in the lantern light.
The first truly Melazan card for the deck of dragons. Artist, you did me proud.
A single misshapen, vaguely polished object in the center of a dark field.
Behold, Paran said under his breath, a shaved knuckle in the hole.
Invisible to all eyes, even those of the Pures, Callum made his way silently up the cobbled road.
Well, hopefully invisible to the Pures. Either way, we'll soon find out.
To his right and left now, deep foxholes where sentries stood, chests against the pit side, looking down on the foreign invaders. At their feet, the dull glow of signal lanterns. Past them, the first berms fronting the lead trench, mounded rocks and earth, high enough to provide cover from arrows and quarrels, treacherous enough underfoot for the attackers to lose their balance and slow their charge. The trenches themselves were solid with Collant's soldiers, well-armoured and armed with pikes. 7 paces behind them, higher up the slope, ran a long slit trench, stepped for the archers. They would loose their arrows at nearly point-blank range, over the heads of the first line of defenders and taking the Malazans at the top of the berm. Calam hoped that Paran's damned card was working. He hoped that the High Fist was now seeing what he was seeing. This could be brutal. There's a decent commander up here somewhere. Quick, Ben, I don't think this is the work of a Fokrel assail. This has the feel of a professional campaigner, probably the Wolves' commander. I hope you're thinking what I'm thinking. Hold on, mercenaries wearing wolf furs? No, couldn't be them. Just some other bastards. Got to be. 2 more tiers to match the lead line, with levelled ramps allowing for retreat should the first trench be overrun, and plenty of reserves positioned in 3 fortified camps just above the last tier. Calam judged there to be at least 6,000 shriven here. Glad I'm not you, Paran. Higher still, where at last Calam thought he could see the summit's edge, beyond which the pass levelled out. A massive stone gate straddled the road, with a low skirting wall above a moat stretching out to either side, effectively blocking the entire pass. And this area was well lit, revealing companies of heavy infantry. They were awake, divided into squads of 10, each squad forming a circle facing inward. The soldiers were praying. Fanatics. That's bad. We've seen this before, too many times. Surrender? Not a chance. Hold on. They were still too far away for him to be certain. He looked for standards, but none were raised. There, a fully armored soldier near the gate. Gods below. Fucking perish! Calam paused, his mind racing, sweat suddenly trickling beneath his garments. They turned on us? Krughava? I can't believe this. Soldiers of the Wolves! God, who else could they have been? Calam, you idiot! Who'd take me? Who'd take us all? But if Krughava's here, it's no wonder the defenses are bristling. All right, woman. He began moving forward once more. Betray us and you get what you deserve. The gateway was barred with projecting spikes, all blackened iron. The lowest row of spikes, ankle high, jutted a hand's length beyond the higher ones, except for a matching row at eye level. There was a lone perished sentry standing behind the gate, visor lowered, heavy spear leaning against one shoulder. 10 paces away, Calam slipped down from the road, made his way along the drainage ditch and down into the moat. At the bottom, short wooden spikes were jammed between sharp-edged rocks. The bank furthest from the wall was soaked in pitch. Firewall. Nothing nice here, nothing at all. Hope you're close, Quick Ben. Hope you know what I'm going to have to do here. He carefully picked his way across the moat, waited a moment, and then whispered the chain word the wizard had given him. Sudden weightlessness. Reaching up, he made his way up and over the wall. As he touched ground on the other side, the weightlessness faded. Well, no alarm yet? So far, Quick's promise of being able to hide magic seems to be holding. Ahead, more guards, but widely spaced enough for the assassin to slip easily between them. He set out, made his way into the camp. Past the squad circles, the soldiers still praying, to an empty marshalling area in the centre, and opposite it, 2 command tents, the one on the right surmounted by a wolf skull atop the centre pole. Grey Helms, all right, but this can't be all of them, unless Tavare made them pay dearly for the treachery. But if she did, then she's probably dead. She never got her chance. Well then, if vengeance is all we have left, let's get started. The other tent was larger, of the same style as those in the besieging camp outside the keep. It was lit from within, and two guards flanked the front flap, both Colansi. Drawing two throwing knives, Callum advanced on them, moving fast. At 5 paces away, he raised both weapons and threw them simultaneously in a single fluid motion. Each found the base of a throat, bodies buckled, blood splashing down. But before they could fall, Callum had reached them, grasping the knife grips to hold both men up before carefully settling them to the ground. How much noise? Oh, who cares? Leaving the daggers where they were, the assassin drew his two long knives, slashed the flap's drawstrings, and then bulled through. He clearly caught the pure by surprise, nothing stealthy or subtle in this approach after all, and collided hard with the fulcral assail. One long knife plunged deep directly beneath the heart. The other, moving up to slash across the throat, was blocked by a forearm hard as iron. Even as the assail stumbled back, his hands lashed out. The first blow caught Callum high on his right shoulder, spinning him off his feet. The second one slammed into his chest on the left side, crushing chain, breaking at least 2 ribs and fracturing others. The impact flung the assassin backwards. He rebounded from the tent wall to the left of the entrance. Half stunned with pain, Callum watched the assail pull the long knife from his chest and fling it away. "Oh," he gasped. "Did I make you mad?" Snarling, the assail advanced on him. The ground disappeared beneath his feet. With a howl, the pure plunged from sight. There followed a thud. Quick Ben materialized just on the other side of the hole, drew out a small round ball of black clay, leaned over to peer down. "Compliments of the Marines," he said, and dropped the ball. The wizard had to lunge backward as a gout of fire shot from the hole, and all at once the tent ceiling was aflame, and Quick Ben was nowhere to be seen. Swearing, Callum retrieved his long knife, he'd somehow held on to the other one, and leapt for the entrance. Rolling clear, groaning at the blinding agony exploding in his chest, he staggered to his feet. On all sides, perished soldiers were rushing to the burning tent. He saw them drawing their swords. "Quick Ben! I'm invisible, right? Quick Ben!" He heard a hiss. "Sheathe that damned knife! Hood's breath!" Callum spun and ran from the nearest attacker, slammed the knife back into its scabbard. "Try again!" he bellowed. He stumbled, fell with a grunt. There was blood in his mouth. "Not good." A hand settled on his back. "Don't move," came Quick Ben's whisper. The perish were retreating now from the raging flames, and the fire was almost close enough to reach out and touch, but Callum felt no heat. "Can we talk?" he asked. "Now we can, aye. You said a sharper." "I changed my mind, needed to make certain. Besides, the sharper's pretty loud." "A hood damned burner, though? Now that's keeping things nice and quiet. Any more pures?" "No, shh. Something's close, tracking us." "How?" "Don't know. I wanted to go after the perish commander, Krughava, or whoever it is." "You're bubbling blood with every breath, Callum. You're in no shape for anything. Stabbed the bastard in the heart and it didn't do a damned thing." "I'm sure it did, but they've got 2 hearts. "Thanks for telling me." Callum grimaced, fought down a cough. "These are the perish, aren't they?" "Aye. Now be quiet and let me drag you away. That fire's starting to burn through what I threw up around us." But the mage dragged Callum for only 2 tugs before the assassin felt Quick Ben's hands suddenly grip tight. "Shit, it's here!" Blinking, Callum twisted, looked round. "I don't see..." "Smells like an Ankarl. Feels like a Tublakai." "Not a chance. Oh, gods below, what's it doing here?" He could feel it now, a massive, looming presence. "What's it doing?" he hissed. "Sniffing you." Callum felt his skin crawl. "Why can't I see it?" "Because it doesn't want you to." The assassin almost shouted when a sharp talon tracked gently across one cheek, ending up directly beneath an eye. He forced himself to lie perfectly still. "A servant of the wolves, I think." "Aye, don't tell me what I already know." Then the hand pressed down on Callum's chest, directly over his shattered ribs. But there was no pain, just a sudden heat. A moment later, the hand was gone. And then...
"Hood, take me," Quick Ben muttered a few heartbeats later. "Gone. Never seen the like. It fucking healed you, Callum. Why did it do that?"
Feeling shaken, fragile, as if he'd inhaled a fist and had only just now coughed it back out, the assassin slowly regained his feet. There was chaos on all sides of the burning tent, and he saw a Perish officer, one of Krughava's ship commanders. He was standing staring at the tent with an odd, almost satisfied expression on his lean face.
"Ready to try for him?" Quick Ben asked.
Callum shook his head. "No, we don't touch the Perish."
"What do you mean?"
"Unless you want that thing to come back a whole lot madder."
"Good point."
"You're sure there aren't any more Pures?"
"No."
"Time to go, then." They set out, winding unseen through the crowd of soldiers. At the skirting wall, the assassin paused and glanced back, and nodded. "Always an even trade. Not that I can remember what I did to make him so happy." In his tent, Paran slowly sat back, carefully setting down the wooden card. He could have pulled them out right at the moment the demon closed on them, but something had held him back. "That was a chosen servant of the Wolves of Winter. I felt its anger, and then I felt its, what was it, solicitude? I didn't know they could even feel things like that." He straightened, walked over to the stick, took it in his hand and pulled it from the ground. The balls on the string snapped after it. A thunderous concussion in the confines of the tent, clouds of dust, and Quick Ben and Callum staggered into view. The wizard's expression twisted with outrage. He glared across at Paran.
"That was a little late, High Fist. We were already halfway back."
Paran waved at the dust. He could hear footsteps from beyond the flap and called out,
"Everything's fine."
From outside, a soldier's voice hissed,
"Hear that, Gibbler? When a High Fist farts, the whole world shakes."
"Shh, you damned idiot."
The footsteps retreated. Paran sighed. "I got impatient waiting for you. Sorry, I didn't know retrieving you was going to be so messy."
"It was for emergencies, sir. I feel like I've been pulled inside out."
"Aye to that," Callum growled, moving over to sit down heavily on the chest. The stout legs snapped and the chest thumped down hard. The assassin winced.
"Just what my old bent spine needed, gods below."
He started pulling off his gloves. "My sister's allies, then. Am I correct, Callum?"
"Good guess." "Allies no longer," said Quick Ben,
and now he was the one pacing in the confines of the tent.
"But that was Erakala, not the mortal sword. Didn't see the shield anvil either. This force is the one that came from the sea, the soldiers left to travel with the fleet."
"So it could be that Krughava has no idea they've turned," Callum said.
"That alliance always had me nervous," Quick Ben said. "Fanatical worshippers of a world without humans. How does that make any sense? Even if Krughava hasn't turned, it's only a matter of time. All they have to do is follow their faith to its logical conclusion. I warned Tavare."
"Now you're lying," Callum said in a growl. The wizard turned on him.
"How would you know?"
"Just guessing. Because I know you, remember? You're just mad at yourself because you never anticipated this happening."
"Fine, have it your way then. The point is, Tavare is in trouble. She could get backstabbed at any time, and there's no way we can warn her."
"Maybe there is," Paran said. "Once we get through this pass, I want you and Callum riding ahead, fast as your horses can take you. Find my sister."
"Did you see those defenses, sir?" Callum demanded. "How do you hope to get the Perish to surrender? They can stop the host right here, right now."
But Paran was frowning.
"Why didn't that demon tear you to pieces, Callum?"
The assassin looked away, shrugged. "Met it before. Did it a favor. Maybe, I think. Can't remember exactly. But it was back in Seven Cities, the middle of the whirlwind. Things happened.
You weave a fine tale, Callum, Quick Ben observed. I leave the endlessly flapping mouth to you, wizard. Clearly a wise decision, but next time, just summarize.
Six high-watered officers stood uneasily before Erikala. 20 paces behind them, the blackened stain and charred wreckage of the Pure's tent, from which embers still blinked open and closed like glowing eyes amidst the ashes, and smoke lifted its black pall. The times the Perish commander had had occasion to engage with these mixed bloods, they had looked upon him with disdain. Now such superiority had been swept away in a conflagration of fire. Brother Serenity was dead, but uttering that statement was akin to stating the impossible. One rank below reverence and diligence, Serenity's power had been immense, matched only by that of calm, or so Erikala had been led to believe.
And Serenity has this night fallen to 2 Malazans. And come the dawn, we shall face in battle 8,000 more. But did the pure brother heed my caution? He did not. We have found blood trails leading out from the pure's tent, he now said. It is fair to assume that Brother Serenity fought hard against his assailants. Indeed, that he might have seriously wounded them, perhaps even killed one.
But he could see no effect from these words. Sighing, Erikala continued.
Will you elect one among you to assume command of the Shriven? Alternatively, you can place yourselves under my command. Dawn is fast approaching, sirs, and we shall soon be locked in battle.
One of the officers stepped forward.
Sir, in all matters tactical, Brother Serenity instructed us to obey your commands.
Erikala nodded.
As you have done.
Sir, the officer began and then hesitated. Speak your mind. The Pures have felt Brother Serenity's death. They are wounded, confused, and from them we receive no guidance. Indeed, Akrast Corvalane itself has been damaged here.
Damaged?
This was unexpected.
How so?
Another hold manifested here last night.
Indeed?
He scanned the faces before him.
Perhaps you too readily discounted the efficacy of 7,000 perish praying to their gods.
We do not speak of the beast hold, sir.
Erikala was silent, for now he was the one left shaken. In a quiet voice he asked,
And have you identified the intruder, sir?
Not us, Commander. Sister Reverence, however, from the storm of her thoughts, we sense her recognition.
Go on.
The man shook his head.
This is all we have, sir.
Is it now your thought that another ancient hold has set itself against Akrast Corvalane?
We would know more of these Malazans, sir.
Erikala frowned.
Have you become uncertain regarding my preparations here?
No, Commander. Today the enemy shall be savaged, possibly shattered. But we seek to understand, are these Malazans nothing more than humans?
No different from us perish, you mean?
Then, do they too serve an elder god?
The Malazan Empire long ago outlawed cults of war in its military. But that is not to say that there are no secret believers among the ranks.
He studied the faces arrayed before him.
Has it not occurred to the Fokrul Asael that, in so forcefully asserting the power of Akrast Corvalane, they would invite the attention of the other elder holds?
It was our understanding that across most of this realm the holds were abandoned, giving way to a younger ascendancy.
Erikala cocked his head.
And was this the case for the perish?
At last a faint sneer from the officer.
You were judged an aberration.
The commander smiled.
We can resume this discussion at a later time. You will descend among the Shriven and take command of your companies.
The officer saluted. Watching them march off, Erikala gestured to one of his aides.
Sister Stalock, make the soldiers aware that we may face more than one enemy this day.
The young woman frowned.
Sir?
And then assure them that the wolves shall guard us against all threats.
Yes, sir.
Alone once more, Erikala made his way to the viewing platform he'd had raised 50 paces to the left of the gate. From there, he would have an unobstructed view of the enemy assault upon his defenses.
Malazans. To utter the name alone is sufficient to pale the most hardened soldier, especially among those who have faced them. What is it about these foreigners, these blades of empire, that so sets them apart?
As he reached the ladder, he paused, recalling all that he had seen of that terrible withdrawal from Malaz City.
Adjunct Tavare, did you know you would come to this land to find other Malazans awaiting you? Are they your allies, or some other gambit orchestrated by Empress Lassine? Are they hunting you? Or is this simply another invasion? A sudden chill tracked through him. If allies, then all of this must have been planned. The thought frightened him. He quickly climbed upward. Reaching the platform, the smell of fresh pine sharp in the air, he crossed the raw wooden boards to the rail facing north. The sky was lightening around him, although the approach to the pass remained in shadow. He could see enemy ranks now arrayed in 5 distinct wedges at the base. Can they not see what awaits them? Perhaps they will succeed in taking the first trench, but the second? It is impossible. The Grey Helms will not even draw weapons this day.
His unease deepened.
Call the Malazans every vile name there is, but do not call them fools.
He stood alone on the platform and waited to see what would come. Grainy-eyed from lack of sleep, Ganos Paran walked until he was opposite the disordered mob. This was always the problem, he reflected, when trying to manage 400 sloppy, unruly marines. The hard eyes, the weathered faces, the sense that they were all half wild and straining at the leash. To make matters worse, this lot slouched before him on this chill morning were, one and all, sappers. Paran glanced back to the mass of wooden crates laid out behind him. There were no guards stationed around them. This entire gathering was taking place 200 paces north of the camp's edge. With good reason. He felt a trickle of sweat work its way down his spine. Facing the sappers once more, and with a glance at Noto Boyle and then Captain Sweet Creek, who stood well off to one side, Paran cleared his throat and began.
I am well aware of your frustration. I held you back from the keep defences, set you to doing repairs and nothing else. I dare say your swords are rusted in their scabbards by now.
Paran paused, but saw no reaction from them, not a smile, not a nod. He cleared his throat again.
I decided that it would be to our tactical advantage to withhold you sappers, along with your particular talents, for as long as possible.
There was not a sound from the assembled troops, and all eyes were fixed on Paran. He glanced again at Noto Boyle. The man was standing a few paces behind and off to one side, fish spine moving up and down in his mouth, staring back at the sappers. Sighing, the High Fist resumed.
In retrospect, perhaps I should have delayed my raid on that Moranth warehouse, and not just for reasons of safety, though, as I am sure you all know, the Moranth are very efficient and careful when storing munitions. Nonetheless, transporting them in bulk and overland entails undeniable risks. Fortunately, here we are, and he gestured behind him, and there they are.
He had been waiting for a heightening of tension, a stirring of anticipation. The first of broadening smiles, soldiers finally straightening to attention even. Instead, Paran's gaze narrowed. Nothing. I might as well be describing the weather. What's wrong with them? Thought they respected me. Thought that maybe I'd finally earned the rank I was saddled with. But now, feels like it was all a sham.
You may be pleased to know that your waiting is at an end. This morning, you will avail yourselves of these munitions and return to your squads. The Marines will lead the assault. You are to break the defences and, if possible, advance to the second trench.
This assault must be rapid and sustained. His words trailed away as he caught something at the corner of his eye. Standing in the front row off to his right, where the sun's light slanted across unobstructed, a grizzled corporal, his broad, flat face seamed with scars visible even from where the high fist stood. Paran squinted at the man. Then he gestured to Note O'Boyle. The cutter walked over, pulling the spine from his mouth. "Note O'Boyle," Paran said in a low tone.
"Sure?"
"Walk over to that corporal, that one there, and take a closer look, and then report back to me."
"Is this a test?"
"Just do it." The cutter reinserted the spine and then headed over to halt directly in front of the corporal. After a moment, he swung round and made his way back. "Well?" Paran demanded. Note O'Boyle removed the spine.
"The man is crying, High Fist."
"He's crying?"
"So it seems, sir."
"But why is he crying?" Note O'Boyle turned back to regard the corporal once more.
"Was just the one tear. Could be anything."
Swearing under his breath, Paran marched over to stand before the corporal. The marine's stare was fixed straight ahead. The track of that lone tear, etching its way down from his right eye, was already dulled with grit and dust.
"Something in your eye, corporal?"
"No, sir."
"Are you ill?"
"No, sir."
"You're trembling."
The eyes flicked briefly in their thinned slits, locked for an instant with Paran's own.
"Is that so? Didn't know that, sir. Begging your pardon."
"Soldier, am I blocking your view?"
"Yes, sir. That you are, sir."
Slowly Paran edged to one side. He studied the sapper's face for a half dozen heartbeats, and then a few more, until...
"Oh, gods below. I thought you said you weren't sick, corporal."
"I'm not, sir. I beg to differ."
"If you like, sir."
"Corporal?"
Another flicker of the eyes.
"Sir?"
"Control yourselves. Be orderly. Don't blow any of us up. Am I understood?"
A quick nod.
"Aye, sir. Bless you, sir."
Startled, Paran's voice sharpened.
"Bless me?"
And from the mob of sappers came a muttered chorus, echoing the corporal's blessing. Paran stepped back, struggled for a moment to regain his composure, and then raised his voice.
"No need to rush. There's plenty for everyone."
He paused upon hearing a faint whimper, then continued.
"In one turn of the sand, I want you back with your squads. Your sergeants have been apprised of this resupply, so you can be sure that the word has gone out. By the time you get back to them, they will all have done with their prayers, sacrifices, and all the rest. In other words, they'll be ready for you. The advance begins two turns of the sand from now. That is all."
He set off, not looking back. Note O'Boyle came up alongside him.
"High Fist."
"What?"
"Is this wise? That's more munitions than any of them has ever seen."
"In those crates are just the sharpers, burners, and smokers. I haven't even let them see the cussers and red bolts."
"Excuse me, sir, the what bolts?"
"It turns out, Noto, that there exists a whole class of munitions exclusive to the Morants. Not for export, if you understand me. Through a card, I was witness to the demonstration of some of them. These ones, which I have called red bolts, are similar to onager bolts. Only they do not require the onager."
"Curious, High Fist. But if you haven't shown them to any sapper yet, how will anyone know how to use them?"
"If we need to fight the Perish, well, it's possible that a crash course will be necessary. For the moment, however, why distract them?"
They were approaching the camp edge, where two companies of regulars and heavies were assembled, one to either side of the cobbled road. Between them, and awaiting their arrival, was Fist Writhe Bude. Note O'Boyle said,
"One more question, sir."
Paran sighed.
"What?"
"Those cussers and red bolts, where did you hide them?"
"Relax, I made my own warren for them. Well, to be more precise, I walled off a small area in a different warren, accessible only to me via a card."
"Ormew Logan?"
"Excuse me? Did he paint the card?"
Of course.
Did he use a funny red slash, sir? Like lightning, only the color of blood?
Paran frowned. Red bolt symbol, yes. How did you know that? Noto Boyle shrugged.
Not sure, sir. Seen it somewhere, I suppose. No matter.
Corporal Stern wiped at his eyes. Crates were being cracked open, the sappers working quickly. He scanned the remaining boxes, swore under his breath, and then turned.
Manx, get over here!
The Dalhanese shaman waddled over.
Just what we figured. Only the small stuff. That bastard don't trust us!
Stern grunted.
You idiot! I don't trust us! But listen, if we...
Manx held up a hand in front of Stern's face.
Got it covered. See?
The corporal tilted his head back, studied the tattoo blazoned across the hand's palm, a blood-red, jagged slash.
That's it? That's all you need? Should do. We made sure the toad described it in detail. Right. Has he recovered? Well, we roasted him a bit crispy here and there, but he'll survive. It all kind of went wrong for a bit. I mean, we had them both trussed up, and we figured just threatening the toad would be enough to make the artist break down and talk. We was wrong. In fact, it was Ormu Logan who suggested the roasting bit. Never seen the old lunatic happier. We thought they was friends.
Be quiet, will you? You're babbling. I don't care what happened so long as you didn't kill either of them. They're alive, I told you. Trussed up and gagged for now. We'll let them go later.
Stern looked round, raised his voice.
Sappers, leave room for a cusser or two.
Ain't no cussers, Stern.
Never mind that. It's taken care of. Now let's get this done, and carefully. We make a mistake here and we don't take none of the bad guys with us on the way out, and that'll send our souls to the fiends of the sapper's torment forever. And nobody wants that, do they?
A sudden hush, a renewed attention to caution, and here and there a few subtle gestures warding against the curse of the sapper's torment. Satisfied, Stern nodded.
Manx, stay close to me from now on. We ain't never used one of those red bolts, Stern.
The man grunted.
Show me a munition I can't figure out, and I'll show you the inside of the Cobra God's nose.
Manx shot him a look.
Figured you had North Dalhan blood in you. What's in my blood don't matter. I just know that when a sapper steps onto the field of battle, they'd be wise to call on every god they ever heard of. Amen, and a spit in the eye to that.
Stern hesitated and then nodded.
Amen, and a spit in the eye back. Now, you ready? Good. Let's go find our squad. The Sarge is gonna love this. No, he ain't. Sarge loves what I tell him to love, Manx. Credo of the Sapper's Knuckle. Who's the holding the sharper? Aye, Sapper's Knuckle. Hey, Stern.
What?
The shaman was grinning.
See what this means? Us sappers. We're back to what we never were, but could have been. And don't that taste sweet? It's only sweet if we don't mess this up. Now pay attention where you're stepping. I seen gopher holes. Ain't a gopher, Stern. These are prairie dogs. Whatever. Stick a foot in one of those and we all go up.
Commander Erikala could feel the wind freshening down from the north, funneling up the narrow approach to the pass. Carried on that breeze was the smell of iron, leather, sweat, and horses. Sister Stalock stood at his side, with a half-dozen messengers stationed behind them should commands need to be sent down to the flag stations positioned along the wall. The enemy forces were shaking out, seething motion all along the front lines. The medium and heavy infantry that had been positioned there in solid ranks since dawn were now splitting up to permit new troops to move forward in ragged formation. These newcomers bore no standards, and most of them had their shields still strapped to their backs. From what Erikala could make out, they were armed with crossbows and short swords.
"Skirmishers?" asked Stalock. "They don't look light on their feet, Commander. Some of them are wearing chain. Nor are they forming a line. Who are these soldiers?"
"Marines."
"They appear undisciplined, sir."
"It is my understanding, Sister Stalock, that against the Malazan Marines, the armies of the Seven Holy Cities had no counter. They are, in fact, unlike any other soldier on the field of battle." She turned to eye him quizzically.
"Sir, may I ask, what else have you heard about these Marines?"
Erikala leaned on the rail. "Heard? Yes, that would be the word." They were advancing now, broken up into squads of 8 or 10, clambering steadily over the rough ground towards the first trench, where waited masses of Shriven, Colansi regulars. Solid enough soldiers, Erikala knew. Proficient, if not spectacular, yet subject to the sorcery of the Forkrel Assail. Without the pure, however, there would be no power sufficient to unleash in them any battle frenzy. Still, they would not buckle so long as the mixed-blood commanders held their nerve.
"I don't understand you, sir."
He glanced across at her. "The night of the adjunct's disengagement from the docks of Malaz City, sister, where were you stationed?"
"The outer screen of ships, sir."
"Ah, do you recall... did you by chance happen to hear thunder that night from the island?" Frowning, she shook her head.
"Sir, for half that night I was in my sling, fast asleep."
"Very well. Your answer, sister, is not long in coming, I fear." 30 rough and broken paces below the first berm now, the squads thinning out, those wielding crossbows raising their weapons. On the Shriven side, the pikes angled down, readying for the enemy to breach the top of the berm. The iron points formed a bristling wall. From the second trench, the archers had moved up, knocking arrows but not yet drawing. Once the Malazans reached the ridgeline, coming into direct line of sight, the arrows would hiss their song, and as the first line of bodies tumbled, the archers would begin firing in longer arcs to angle the arrows down the slope. And the advance would grind to a halt, with soldiers huddling under their shields, seeking cover from the rain of death. 20 paces now, where there was a pause in the advance, only an instant, and then Erikala saw arms swinging, tiny objects sailing out from the hands. "Too soon." Striking the bank 2/3 of the way up, sudden billowing of thick black smoke boiling out, devouring the lines of sight. Like a bank of fog, the impenetrable wall rolled up and over the berm's topside.
"Majory?"
gasped Stalock. Erikala shook his head. And from that rising tide of midnight, more objects sailed out, landing amidst the pike-wielding press of Shriven. Detonations and flashes of fire erupted along the entire length of the trench. The mass of Colansi shook, and everywhere was the bright crimson of blood and torn flesh. A second wave of munitions landed. The report of their explosions echoed up the slope, followed by screams and shrieks of pain. The smoke was rolling into the trench, torn here and there by further detonations, but this just added dust and misted blood to the roiling mix. Along the second trench, the archers were wavering. "Begin firing blind," Erikala murmured. "Do it now." And he was pleased to see watered officers bellowing their commands and the bows drawn back. A sleet of quarrels shot out from the smoke and dust, tore into the archers, and the heads of many of these quarrels were explosive, the entire line disintegrated, bodies tumbling back to the crouching loaders. More grenadoes arced after the quarrels down into the trench. Closer now, Erikala could see limbs ripped clean from bodies spinning in the air. Higher up the slope, the reserve companies boiled into motion, rushing down towards the third trench, while those troops who had been stationed in that position were now foaming up over their own berm to begin a downhill charge. The line of archers dug in above the third trench was swept up in the wholesale advance.
"What are they doing?" demanded Stalock.
"The trenches are proving indefensible against these munitions," Erikala replied. "The half-blood officers have correctly determined the proper response to this. They must close with the Marines. Their elevation and their numbers alone should win the day." The Marines, he now saw beneath the fast-thinning smoke, had overrun the archers' trench and looked to be digging in all along the line. But Erikala had ensured that the earthworks were designed in such a manner as to expose them to attack from higher up the slope. Those trenches offered them nothing. The Marines began scurrying in full retreat.
"They're panicking," hissed Stalock. "They've run out of toys, and now..."
The descending, elongated mass of Colansi was like an avalanche racing after the straggly Marines.
"Hold up at the lowest trench," Erikala pleaded. "Don't follow the fools all the way down."
The sound of that charge past the archer's trench and into the dip of the first trench was like thunder. There were officers in the lead ranks. Erikala saw them checking their soldiers. The whole scene vanished in multiple eruptions, as if the entire slope had exploded beneath the Colansi forces. The concussion rolled upwards to shake the summit, fracturing the wall and shaking the stone gates, taking hold of the wooden platform Erikala and the others stood on and rattling it so fiercely that they all lost their footing. Rails snapped and men and women tumbled over the sides, screaming. Erikala grasped one side post, managed to hang on as successive shock waves slammed up the slope.
"Wolves protect us!"
Twisting now on the strangely tilted platform, he saw the clouds lifting to blot out the view to the north. Dust and dirt, armor and weapons, and sodden strips of clothing, all of it now swept down towards them, a grisly rain of devastation. Unmindful of the deadly deluge, Erikala pulled himself upright. One of the legs of the platform had snapped, and he was alone. Even Stalock had plummeted to the broken ground below. A sword tip stabbed deep into the pine boards just off to his left, the blade quivering with the impact. More rubble rained down. He stared downslope, struggling to make sense of what he was seeing. All but the highest, nearest trench, along with the leveled ground behind it, was torn chaos. The ground wounded with overlapping craters steaming amidst chewed-up corpses. Most of the Colansi army was simply gone. And then he saw movement once again, from the downward end. The same Marines swarming back up the slope, into the huge bites in the earth, up and over. Squads advancing, others drawing into tight clumps and beginning work on something. Streams of Colansi survivors, stunned, painted crimson, were retreating up towards the stone wall, clumping on the cobbled road. Most of the soldiers had flung away their weapons.
Just like that, the Colansi are finished.
Strange crackling bursts of fire from the Marines, and Erikala's eyes widened to see streaks of flame race out from squad positions, sizzling as they lunged up and into the air, arcing upslope. Of the dozen terrifying projectiles launched, only two directly struck the crowded road. The platform under Erikala pitched back, flinging him round. He lost his grip, slid past the embedded sword, and then he was falling. There was no sound. He realized that he had been deafened, and so in sweet, perfect silence, he watched the ground race up to meet him, and overhead, shadow stole the morning light. Stalock had only just picked herself up, bruised and aching, when a closer detonation threw her back to the ground. The wall before her rippled, punching away the soldiers huddled against its protective barrier. And then, with a roar of fire, something descended on the gate to her right. The stones disintegrated in a flash of light. The sound of the impact threatened to crush her. Stunned, she staggered away from the blazing gate, saw Commander Erikala lying not 10 paces away in the wreckage of the toppled platform. Vague motions from his body drew her to him.
"Brother Erikala!"
she cried. His eyes were open, but the whites were crazed with blood. His mouth opened and closed like that of a beached fish, but she could hear no breaths going in or out. Just as she reached his side, she heard a desperate gasp from the man, and all at once he was on his side, coughing.
"Commander!"
But he did not hear her. She could see that. She looked up. Entire companies of Perish had been thrown to the ground by multiple impacts.
"This is not war. This is slaughter."
And in her skull, she thought she could hear the howling of her gods. A sound of impotent rage and blind defiance. A sound that understood nothing. A gloved hand grasped Stern by the shoulder and spun him round. Snarling, he reached for his sword and then stared.
"Fist! Cease the bombardment immediately!"
The corporal looked up and down the rough line of Red Bolt stations. The crates positioned behind them had each been cracked, and bundles of fleece-packed padding lay torn and scattered between the crates and the launch sites. He did a quick count of the nearest ones.
"Still got 4 or 5 salvos left, sir, right down the line."
"I said stop! The High Fist does not want the Perish engaged."
Stern blinked.
"But we ain't engaging the Perish."
"Have you any idea how far those bolts are going?"
The corporal turned to spit grit from his mouth. There was another taste there, bitter, new to his tongue.
"We're softening up that wall, that's all. Not one's gone beyond it, Fist, on my word."
"Pass it down! Cease your fire!"
"Aye, Fist! Oh, Fist! Did you see that fiddling hedge drum? Gods below, in all my days left, I'll never forget."
He stopped when he saw the black rage in her face.
"We wanted them broken, sapper, not all dead!"
Stern scowled.
"Sorry, Fist, but nobody told us that."
For a moment he thought she might attack him. Instead, off she stormed. Stern watched her head laterally across the slope to where regulars and heavies were drawing up, struggling to stay on what was left of the cobbled road.
"Shit, we're going to have to rebuild that, aren't we? But isn't that the secret truth of everything in the military? Order us to blow it up and then order us to rebuild the fucker. Ah, the sapper's lot."
Manx crunched down at his side, his face flash-burned and smeared with greasy smoke.
"Why are we holding up? Got a plenty left?" "Fist's orders, Manx. Listen, pass word along. Repack the crates. Use all that extra padding."
He straightened, arched out the ache in his lower back, and then looked round. Enormous holes in the earth, huge craters steaming, heaps of shattered bodies, dust and dirt and blood still raining down through the choking smoke. He sighed.
"Looks like our work here is done."
Stalock helped Erikala to his feet. There was a storm in his head, a droning rush as if the heavens had opened to a deluge, and beneath that pounded the laboring drum of his own heart. Looking up, squinting through the pall of smoke and dust, he saw his soldiers swarming like wasps. Officers were shouting, straining to assert some order in the chaos.
"What? What is happening?"
He heard his own question as the faintest of whispers. Stalock replied from what seemed 1,000 paces away.
"There are Malazans on the other side of the pass, Commander. At least 4 companies."
"But that's impossible."
"They simply appeared, sir. Now we are trapped between 2 armies."
Erikala shook his head, struggling to clear his thoughts.
"This cannot be. We were told there was no other way through the mountains." "Form up into hollow squares, the wounded in the center."
Staggering, he set out towards the southern stretch of the pass. Behind him, Stalock was shouting orders. Pushing through his soldiers, appalled at their shattered discipline, Erikala moved through the camp, still half dazed, until he was beyond the last of the Perish tents. The smoke and dust flowed past him, carrying with it the stench of burnt meat and scorched cloth and leather. He thought back to what he had seen down among the trenches and shivered,
What has come to us? What have we become to do such things? Within sight of the Malazans, he halted. There was no mistaking this. The companies he now looked upon were the same as those he had seen earlier, down on the north side of the pass. Warren, but no one has such power. I doubt even the gods could open such gates. Yet how can I deny what I see with my own eyes? The enemy was drawn up, presenting a curious mix of heavy infantry, marines with crossbows, regulars and skirmishers. Beyond them, a single small tent had been raised, around which soldiers clustered. A messenger ran up to Erikala from behind.
Sir, the enemy has reached the highest trench and continues to advance.
Thank you, Erikala replied. He saw two figures emerging from the ranks, walking side by side, one tall, the other almost as tall, but much broader across the shoulders. The ebon sheen of their skin cut a stark contrast to the bleached landscape.
Dalhonese or Southeast Seven Cities. Ah, I know these two men. The thin one, I remember him standing at the prow, facing down the Tist Edur fleet. The High Mage, Quick Ben, meaning the other one is the assassin. They do not belong here. But among all the flaws afflicting me, blindness is not one of them.
Ignoring the soldier behind him, the commander set out to meet the two men.
Look at us now, Quick Ben muttered.
Never mind us, Callum growled in reply. I see the commander. That's Erikala, right? See the ranks behind him? They're a mess.
You know, the wizard said, I didn't think it was possible, opening two gates at the same time like that, and the size of them. Gods below, he really is the master of the deck.
Callum glanced across at him. You were skeptical?
I'm always skeptical.
Well, impressive as it was, Paran came out half dead, so even he has his limits.
Minala's all over him. Jealous, Callum?
The assassin shrugged.
That's one bone I never had in my body, Quick.
Her and Rhys Bude. What is it with Ganos Paran, anyway? All these women slobbering all over him.
He's younger, Callum said. That's all it takes, you know. Us old farts ain't got a chance.
Speak for yourself.
Wipe that grin off, Quick, or I'll do it for you.
They were closing on Erikala now, and would meet approximately halfway between the two armies. The way it should be.
Look at us, Quick Ben said again, low, under his breath. What do we know about negotiating?
So leave it to me, Callum replied. I mean to keep it simple.
Oh, this should be fun.
They halted 6 paces from the Perish commander, who also stopped, and the assassin wasted no time.
Commander Erikala! High Fist Paran extends his greetings. He wants you to surrender, so we don't have to kill all of you.
The man looked like he'd been caught in the blast wave of a cusser or sharper. His face was speckled with tiny cuts and gashes. Dust covered his uniform, and he'd lost one chain-backed gauntlet. Erikala opened his mouth, shut it, and then tried again.
Surrender? Callum scowled. Those sappers have only just started. You understanding me? What have you done?
Callum grimaced, glanced away, hands now on his hips, and then looked back at the commander.
You're seeing how it's going to be. The old way of fighting is on its way out. The future, Erikala, just stood up and bit off half your face.
Erikala was clearly confused.
The future? This is how it'll be, from now on. Fuck all the animals, they'll all be gone. But we'll still be here. We'll still be killing each other, but this time in unimaginable numbers.
The commander shook his head.
When all the beasts are gone, long live the cruelest beast of all, Callum said, suddenly baring his teeth. And it won't end. It'll never end.